In the Old Testament, God appointed the kings of Israel and Judah to rule as his vassals over his people. But ultimately, these kings failed to lead the people into God's greatest blessings. So, Israel and Judah looked forward to the day when the Messiah would fulfill all their hopes for kingship. But when Jesus arrived, the Jewish people rejected him, partly because they didn't believe he really was the Messiah. What did the Jews in Jesus' day expect the Messiah to do? And did their expectations reflect Old Testament teachings?
The evidence from the first century suggests that the Jews were looking for especially a political, a military Messiah who would establish God's kingdom, who would expel the Romans, defeat the Romans, and establish God's kingdom in Jerusalem as the center. And so it was very nationalistic in that sense. Jesus didn't show signs that he was going to fulfill that nationalistic sense. Instead, he had a much larger vision, really. It wasn't about the Romans, it was really about creation itself. Creation was in a fallen state, and Jesus came to reverse the fall, to establish God's kingdom on earth, and that kingdom meant the defeat of sin, the defeat of Satan, the defeat of death. So Jesus was looking at something much greater than merely a political victory, merely a military victory. In fact, Jesus' miracles really demonstrate what the kingdom was all about. Because when Jesus healed the sick, what was he doing? Well, he was obviously demonstrating God's compassion, God's love for people. He cared for people, so he healed them. But really, it's much more significant than that. In the Old Testament prophecies of Isaiah predicts that when the kingdom comes, that is when God restores his creation, the lame will walk and the blind will see, the deaf will hear. In other words, sickness is ultimately a result of human fallenness and the fallen state of creation. So what Jesus is doing, he's doing little snapshots of the kingdom. He's demonstrating what it would look like when God restores his creation. And so the healings are really a demonstration that this is much greater than just a physical defeat of the Romans or physical liberation in Israel. This is a restoration of the world as God had originally intended it to be. The exorcisms then have the same significance, because what does Jesus do? He casts out demons. Well, that's an act of compassion, freeing someone from Satan's power. But in another sense, it's got a larger purpose, and that larger purpose is to demonstrate that Satan himself is being defeated. This world that's been in the grip of Satan since the fall of Adam and Eve, God is taking back his kingdom. And so little snapshots by Jesus to demonstrate that by casting out demons, showing his authority over Satan, that with his death on the cross, he's going to defeat sin, Satan, and ultimately death as well.
Clearly, the concept of the Messiah is very important in the Old Testament. The Messiah is the anointed one, the anointed king. It's interesting to wonder, how would Christ have come if in fact Israel had been obedient and had not demanded a human king? But they did. And so you had this succession of anointed ones who were not caring for their people, who were not establishing God's justice in the world, who were self-centered. And so you have this longing emerging in the Old Testament. Oh, couldn't we have a Messiah who would be what a Messiah is supposed to be? And so you have this picture of the king who is coming. But especially in Isaiah, there is a fascinating connection between this coming king and the Holy Spirit. The people of the Old Testament are not only longing for a Messiah, they're also longing for the Holy Spirit to come and enable them to obey their Torah. So it's interesting to see the ways in which Isaiah, in particular, pictures the relationship between the Messiah and the Spirit. He'll be filled with the Spirit. He is anointed by the Spirit. He is the one who speaks through the Spirit. And therefore, the apostles don't seem to be surprised when the risen Jesus says to them, wait in Jerusalem for the promise of the Father. It's as though, finally the Messiah has said something we expected the Messiah to say, I'm going to make the Holy Spirit available. What they didn't do was to understand what the Messiah's cost would be to bring in this age of God's justice and the age of the Spirit. They did not connect Isaiah 53 to Isaiah 11. They did not connect the fact that the Messiah would have to die in order to bring in this kingdom of justice and peace and the life of the Spirit.
And it's very interesting to think of what the Jews of Jesus' day thought in terms of the coming of the Messiah. And actually, there were a lot of diverse beliefs out there. We have some documents from the Dead Sea Scrolls that show that some believed in two Messiahs coming, a priestly Messiah and a kingly Messiah. But the mainstream expectation was that the Messiah would be a son of David and that he would bring in political peace, that he would drive out the Romans. You can read this today in a book called The Psalms of Solomon. That's even available on the internet. You could Google that and find that very easily. The Psalms of Solomon speak of the wicked who are in Israel, probably thinking of the Romans and some within Israel who compromised with the Romans. And it teaches very clearly that when the Messiah comes, he will come as a military ruler. He will expel the sinners. He will bring in righteousness, and then the people of God will dwell in peace. And it's clear, I think, in reading the New Testament. We think of John 6, for example, where the Jews came to make Jesus a king, that this is what the Jews of Jesus' day expected of him as well. And of course, as you know, Jesus crossed them up again and again. He seemed to have no interest in this political realm that they were expecting. He surprised the religious leaders again and again with his stance towards the law, which I think was a right understanding. He focused, of course, on women and tax collectors and sinners. I think the religious establishment believed that the kingdom would come in if Israel would obey the law. They actually viewed Jesus as a threat in that regard, because Jesus didn't seem to be advancing obedience to the law, but transgression of it, at least in their view. So he didn't have the political machinery that they expected, and then in terms of the law, he didn't do what they expected as well, and so they were, I think, scandalized by him. Actually, I think at the end of the day, they viewed Jesus in terms of Deuteronomy 13, a person who did signs and wonders and miracles, but was actually a false prophet, and therefore that he should be put to death. So they had just a profoundly different understanding of Jesus.